the Avenging Hour. I'm Jason.
I'm John.
Hey, we're here.
We are here.
One of these days, I'm going to have you do the opening.
Well, that would be weird.
Just throw everybody off.
Well, throw me off.
No, I'm John. I'm Jason.
You'd have to write it down for me so I would know what to say. I don't know how we...
All those words.
I don't know what you say at the beginning. I don't start paying attention until you say my name.
What?
So, it's December now. We're firmly in the Christmas season.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Why not?
You're such a bug.
You're just such a Scrooge. Oh, the Avenging Hour Mansion is festively decorated, and I'm told that your house is...
Not.
No,
there's just dirty laundry everywhere. I have 3 kids and 2 dogs. Come on.
I don't know what you need.
I don't need anything, man.
Less things in your house.
I have a nice, warm household with a lot of energy.
It is interesting you say it, because I have a very cold, austere household.
But it's decorated well.
But it's well decorated.
We should come up with a question. I guess it's too early, though, in December. We'll have to do a...
I already did a Christmas question last week.
I know. Maybe the next week or 2 weeks from now, we'll do one where we ask, like, you know, if you were going to get an Avenger a present, who would it be and what would you get them kind of thing. I could say that now to you, but I know you're just staring at me like, whoa. That's too much to think about.
I can ask you a Christmas question.
You're just staring off at stuff like, what's your favorite color of...
I'm looking for inspiration. Whose house, which Avenger do you think has the best decorated house for the holidays?
I mean,
or who puts out the tackiest stuff? Who's got the inflatable Santa on their front lawn? No offense to those listeners who have inflatable Santas on their front lawn.
Are we talking about, like, ever or in, like, the current lineup?
Well, I was thinking ever. Usually we do ever.
Yeah, but I was thinking, like, I would like to think that Hank and Jan, since they live together, would have some really tacky, stupid stuff. But now they're split, so it's not as funny.
Oh, no, but I like that. I think you can, like the collector, you can pull people out of the timeline wherever you want. So, I really like that idea because you know she has all that money and you just know she'd buy the tackiest things.
Right? I would think like the saddest would be like Hawkeye's house. Like his apartment has like a Charlie Brown tree. And,
get that.
Yeah. He's got like an old sock hanging up.
Poor Iron Man's. Well, no, he'd have
Iron, the thing with Iron Man, though, is he can't let anybody know that he's Tony Stark, so...
Tony Stark's place would be decorated by someone. He wouldn't decorate, because I was thinking like of a tree made out of beer cans.
Like, just a pile of empty bottles.
Yeah.
Like, you know Tony Stark would have like the big holiday party.
And he would have
all the Avengers over, but then he would be that...
He would hire someone to decorate it. He wouldn't do it himself.
It would be like a funny sitcom episode where you have to keep switching into Iron Man armor and then back to Tony Stark to try and like woo some girl.
Are there any Jewish Avengers? Well, once he becomes a member, Vance Astrovik is.
What's that chick, Sabra? Is that her name? Was she ever an Avenger?
Who knows with Bendis, but not before that.
I'm sure she was when Hickman came on and made Avengers World.
How do you think the Hulk decorates his cave?
Is the Hulk Jewish?
No, but how do you think he decorates
his Hulk, cave where
Hulk
he lives?
White tree?
How does he decorate the, quote, Southwest?
Yeah.
He just glows. Doesn't he have a normal...
He's not radioactive, you know. No. Poor Rick Jones. Rick Jones dies of cancer at the age of 17.
Should we just get into this now?
Probably.
Previously on the Avenging Hour, we finally reached the end of the Korvac saga and everybody died. And now episode 78.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter because we just pick up like nothing happened anyway. We are handling an annual this episode and then one issue that has absolutely nothing to do with anything. So it's basically like two completely different things that don't matter in the long run. Thanks for listening. First up is annual number 8 from 1978. I believe it came out in October. This one is by Roger Slifer.
Sure.
And George Perez, which is weird. And it is called Spectrums of Deceit. Should we say who Roger Slifer was?
Yeah, sure, we can do that.
Roger Slifer was born November 11th, 1954, and got his start in comics as part of the Indianapolis-based CPL Gang, a group of comic enthusiasts who published fanzines associated with Charlton Comics. The CPL Gang was founded by Roger Stern and Bob Layton. The group also included future comic pros Tony Isabella, Stephen Grant, and John Byrne, among others. Slifer became a freelance writer for Marvel in the mid-70s, working on The Defenders, Marvel 2-in-1, and Iron Man. He slid over to DC in 1981 to become their first direct market sales manager and continued to do some writing, notably on Omega Men, where he co-created Lobo. He left DC in a dispute over creators' rights and went into animation as a producer on such shows as Gem and the Holograms, My Little Pony and Friends, Transformers, and Yu-Gi-Oh! He was injured in a hit-and-run accident and died on March 30th, 2015, after 3 years of institutional care.
You know, and I know that there's a way that this is going to...
Do you think there's like a Scourge of the Underworld out there that's hit-and-running like...
Yes! I mean, I know people? It sounds snarky.
Is that what you were getting at?
Yes! He's the second one we've talked about, but I can think of at least one more that happened just a couple of years ago, and I can't remember who it was. Might have even been an artist that was hit by a hit-and-run driver.
Yeah.
it's like, it just seems so odd.
There's some angry guy out there in his parents' basement going through comic books going, oh, I hate it when he did to that character.
I could do better than they do.
I'm going to drag him down and hit him in my van.
Why can't I be? I should be a professional.
Was Stephen King thinking about writing a comic when he got hit by that guy?
That's horrible.
Dude just driving around.
He did co-write American Vampire, though.
Well, yeah, after the fact, sure. Maybe it was Stephen King. Maybe he's the one who hit them, and then he just did the whole van thing as a setup.
Because he's like...
He had his son get in the van and pretend to hit him or something.
Because he said, I know that Scott Snyder will ask Roger Slifer to write American Vampire.
And take him down.
I gotta get him out of the way.
This is horrible that we're talking about this.
Right?
Anyway, the annual, Spectrums of Deceit. Our story begins with Yellowjacket constructing a mirrored prison room for Wasp, just like the one Ultron made for Wanda a few issues back. Like son, like father. Oh wait, that's not a prison. It's the reconstructed gem from the evil Dr. Spectrum that Hank plans to give to Jan for her birthday. How romantic. Knowing Hank's crazy past and his violent future, I'm sure this won't backfire at all. Hank tucks the massive gem into a drawer just as Jan comes into the room. They chat about her birthday present. She wants to know if it's bigger than a bread box. I think she's making Hank insecure, so he wanders off to change clothes. While he's gone, Wasp's curiosity gets the best of her. She shrinks in size and zips into the drawer through its keyhole to take a gander at her gift. Sure enough, 2 pages after Hank assures us that the gem is now harmless, Wasp is possessed by the gem. Meanwhile, in the library, Quicksilver is shelving books while Wonder Man reads the paper. I don't believe any of that. They hear an explosion coming from Hank's lab and rush in there just in time to face Dr. Spectrum in female form. Quicksilver is immediately knocked out. After a villainous soliloquy explaining that the gem is Dr. Spectrum, Wonder Man is zapped into a trance. Dr. Spectrum flies off in search of the one foe who knows its weakness, Iron Man. Iron Man is helping some construction workers erect a solar collector seed, whatever the hell that is, when Jan innocently approaches him and zaps him unconscious. The two return to Avengers Mansion, where we learn that Dr. Spectrum has hidden Quicksilver and Wonder Man in the swimming pool. It adds Iron Man to the light box and shoots the three heroes off to the depths of the Atlantic Ocean. Dr. Spectrum next turns its attention to Hank Pym, blasting into his room. Pym shrinks down and attacks the villain with flying ants, which works long enough for some other team members to discover a newly busted wall and want to investigate. Beast, Captain America, Ms. Marvel, and Black Panther jump into the fray. That fight lasts for 3 pages and features Ms. Marvel knocking Dr. Spectrum through a new hole in the wall right next to the previous one. Then Hawkeye and Scarlet Witch wander into the battle. Dr. Spectrum is as confused by the sheer number of Avengers as we have been for a few weeks now. As it's explaining how its mind can conceive anything to defeat them, Vision rises up out of the swimming pool holding 2 floodlights. And zaps Dr. Spectrum. The ultraviolet light knocks the creature out. As its costume fades and Jan returns, we find out that her life hangs in the balance yet again. Oh, come on already. Needing the world's greatest doctor, regardless of specialty or location or education or reality, Hank phones Dr. Donald Blake at whatever flophouse he's pretending to practice medicine in and asks him to hurry on over because the wife is having a dying spell again. Thor flies over and changes back to Blake. He knocks on the front door and, I'm just kidding. He wanders in through one of the holes in the wall and conducts a full medical workup, which consists of looking at her and saying she's in a trance. Since Moondragon is probably still off crying about how everyone is dead, the team takes Wasp to an only other person they know who handles trances, Doctor Strange. Strange can't be bothered with these mortal concerns because he's busy watching his wife dance in a psychedelic space cave. But he lets the Avengers know that he cast a spell on the Squadron Sinister members, causing them to forget who they are. If they want to rescue Jan, they could always remind the bad guys that they're bad guys. But that would make them all remember, and maybe they're not quite up for that. Cap waves him off. We're the Avengers! We'll just act as punching bags until the bad guys get bored and leave, letting us win by forfeit. With that, the team flies off in a Quinjet to find the villains. Hey, wait a minute, who cleared them to fly? And now we're on to part 2, to tame a tortured titan. At a health club in Queens, Thundra is interested in a job as a trainer. She meets with a Mr. Kant and immediately impresses him. Before they can fill out her W-2s, though, Black Panther, Vision, and Ms. Marvel stop by for a chat. Mr. Kant is not pleased, and neither is Thundra. Apparently, she needs this paycheck bad enough to punch Ms. Marvel through a wall. Fight, fight, fight! Turns out this Mr. Kant is actually Hyperion. Hyperion sticks his hand through Vision's head and gets zapped, then the two talk it out and everything is cool. Part 3, the Speedster Sinister. Cap, Scarlet Witch, and Hawkeye walk into a warehouse. Stop me if you've heard this one before. The foreman calls out for some guy named Harvey. Harvey sees the Avengers and remembers he's the Whizzer. Fight, fight, fight. Whizzer takes a shield to the back of the head and is knocked out. Part 4, where there's a will. Beast drops in on some sort of holy revival held by a Reverend Billy Roberts. He tells Roberts about the gem, causing the good Reverend to remember that he was Dr. Spectrum. Roberts convinces Beast that he can help and asks to be taken to Wasp. Upon arriving back through the hole in the mansion wall, Reverend Roberts touches the gem and draws it back into him, once again becoming the evil Dr. Spectrum. Duh, totally saw that coming. Fight, fight, fight. Thor shows up. The Dr. Spectrum gem launches itself at his hammer and takes control of the Thunder God. Uh-oh. Meanwhile, in the ocean, the three encapsulated heroes finally make their escape. Iron Man knows he must leave his two allies in order to defeat the power of the Prism. Back at the mansion, Thor makes quick work of his teammates before Iron Man flies in for the rescue. Shellhead bathes Thor in ultraviolet light, but the god's power brings immunity to the Prism. However, Mjolnir is not so lucky. With Thor tainted by the Prism's evil, he is no longer worthy of the ancient hammer, and it drops to the ground. Iron Man and Thor duke it out long enough for Iron Man to break out his long-lost roller skates, and long enough for Mjolnir to return to walking stick form, causing the Prism to shriek in horror and cease to be. Iron Man rescues Thor, now in his Donald Blake shape, from the swimming pool, and everyone celebrates Jan's birthday. Hooray! We finally reached the end. You're not going to know this from all the editing I'm going to do to this episode, but that took me about an hour to read.
Oh, it's a shame you should leave it in.
Oh, wow, I think I cried twice. Our roll call is Yellowjacket, Wasp, Quicksilver, Wonder Man, Iron Man, Beast, Captain America, Ms. Marvel, Black Panther, Hawkeye, Scarlet Witch, Vision, and Thor. They get some help from Wong and Doctor Strange, and our villains at different times are a couple different Doctor Spectrums, Thundra, and the evil Whizzer, but not the other Whizzer. We know of Doctor Spectrum and the Whizzer from the Squadron Sinister back in the day. Thundra first appeared in Fantastic Four number 129 in December of 1972. She was created by Roy Thomas and Jerry Conway, although I'm sure neither of them remember it. And she is a Femazon, a female warrior from an alternate future Earth who has been genetically engineered to have superhuman strength, endurance, speed, and resistance to injury. She kind of switches sides between good and evil.
On her world, you can pretty much summarize her world as women rule, men drool.
Yeah.
And she comes to... Her world is at war with a male-dominated society.
Right, they're gonna merge or something, like some cosmic thing is going to make the two worlds merge, and then the men will be in charge. I think they're worried
about it. And she wants to prove to the men that she wants to basically scare them, the male dominated society. And so to do that, she comes to Earth and picks a fight with the strongest man on Earth, which she thinks is the thing, because right. It's a Fantastic Four comic.
Of course. So her whole thing is just fighting people.
Well, she got stuck on her world, which is where she's at here.
And she needs a job.
Yeah, she needs a job because she's stuck here. So she came to fight the thing. The thing beat her. Now she can't go home.
Right.
This will eventually carry over into the Project Pegasus saga in Marvel 2 and 1.
I said it here. We'll actually see her again in about 11 years in an issue of West Coast Avengers. And then a few years after that in the regular Avengers in a storyline with Archon.
Yeah, she's... Thunder's not a bad character, but I feel like the 70s, they really wanted to push her. Because she was... I feel like she popped up a lot in the 70s. She is completely superfluous in this issue.
Yeah,
you can pluck Thunder out of this issue, it changes nothing.
You can pluck most of these part 2, 3, and 4 out of the issue and it does nothing.
So I'm assuming that they just wanted to pop her in here to try and get her to get her more exposure, but...
I guess they're just showing a greater Marvel universe, how it's all tied together. Right. All the characters are.
She's not an evil person. She just is she's a warrior.
Yeah, well, she kind of takes sides to suit herself, I think. Because sometimes she teams up with the Frightful Four.
Yes.
At some point, but then she's also with the good guys.
She works for the Grapplers.
Yeah.
When she invades. But she eventually will become, she has respect for some of the heroes.
Right.
And so that's what gets her to work with them. And there's not much to say about this issue.
I don't understand the storyline. So Doctor Strange told him, hey, there's people from the Squadron Sinister are here on Earth, but they don't know that they were from the Squadron Sinister. So if you're looking for Dr. Spectrum, you just have to go, wouldn't Dr. Strange know which one of them was Dr. Spectrum?
Yeah, so much about this plot doesn't make sense, and that's part of it. That makes no sense. Why?
And where's Golden Archer? they didn't have to go find him.
There's no reason that they need to go and wake up all these heroes. They get nothing from it.
Yeah. And now what are they supposed to do with them? Like, Hyperion now knows that he was Hyperion. What are you going to do with him?
Well, Hyperion seems kind of cool, but now you got the Whizzer and, I guess you got the Whizzer.
We already had one too many Whizzers on this planet.
One Whizzer is one too many. Yeah,
nobody likes a Whizzer.
So, I'm a little confused that Hank apparently is a gem cutter now?
I mean,
don't you have to have some special skill to do that?
That first title page, I thought, oh my god, it's that Ultron, the Ultron prison that Scarlet Witch
is in. It really does look like it. And again, I mean, nobody but Hank Pym would think, I'll give my wife a power gem from a former supervillain.
An evil power gem.
Who thinks that's a good idea?
It's fine.
When Dr. Spectrum takes over the Wasp, when the gem takes over the Wasp, it says that it can take over the Wasp because she has no obsessive desires. In the first 60 issues of this book while she was trying to get Hank Pym to marry her. If that wasn't obsessive, it was very close.
And now she doesn't care.
I guess now she's married, so she's...
And she has money.
She's gem fodder.
Just another clueless female.
The Beast is back this issue. No explanation of where he's been or why he came back.
There's no explanation why all these people are alive.
You mentioned that. Hyperion Syntax is all over the map. Did you notice that? When they talk to him, sometimes he's like, hey, what you doing, you? And then he's talking like some overeducated scientist.
Yeah, there's that one panel where it was really like New Yorker.
Yeah, I didn't understand it at all.
Hey, you guys want to start a fight?
Oh, yeah, Tomato Face? I bet you ain't so tough without them I-beams.
Yeah, where did that
And then, like, a panel later, he's like, you deride my actions, calling them emotions. And I'm like, what in the world? Are you the same? I mean, that's literally on the same page.
Yeah.
I really do wish that the wizard would just change his name to Speed Demon already. And that's it. I got no other notes for this. And, of course, we've done the bullpen bulletins, and there's no letters page.
No, we haven't done. There's a completely different bullpen bulletins.
Is that the one from next issue?
No, it's completely different. I was baffled by it.
I read this on my iPad, so I didn't actually look at the bullpen bulletins.
Yeah, Stan Soapbox answers the question, how do you explain how Marvel is so much better than DC? That was the question that readers sent into him. Softball questions. He goes on this rant about how no comics are better or worse. They're all just different.
Yeah.
And then he talks in circles for half the page before finally confessing that maybe he'll be more specific next month.
Is there anything interesting in the bullpen bulletins?
There's an item declaring that fans describe their Pizzazz magazine as a cross between Crazy and the Lampoon. No, they don't. No one ever said that.
First of all, you have no fans for that magazine.
The rest of the bullpen bulletins is just them saying that Marvel's publishing a lot of licensed stuff. They did Jaws comics, and they're going to do Jaws 2. They're doing a Sgt. Pepper Lonely Hearts Club Band comic. They're doing Kiss comics, and then there's an upcoming Battlestar Galactica comic. The whole thing. It's all licensed stuff.
Normally when they do licensed comics, they'll tell the story of like the movie, but then they keep going,
yeah.
Like Battlestar Galactica and Star Wars. I really hope that's how they did Jaws. That, like, after the events of the movie,
we
like,
meet Jaws' family.
We follow another shark around for a while. And
his son's out for revenge because they killed his dad.
Right? And, you know, I'd like to think that there's an extended Jaws family that we've just never really seen.
Like the Batman family magazine that,
yes. Yeah,
we're going to have a Jaws family magazine.
You know, if that had been published, like, 8 years earlier, in the earlier part of the 70s when people were still buying comic books, I bet there would have been a Jaws family.
Yeah, I understand, because they do the Kiss comics, and it's not like the comic is like a Kiss concert and then what they do after the concert. Like, they turned Kiss into superheroes. Each got a character. I don't know why they didn't do that with... Did they do that with Sgt. Pepper's one?
I don't know. I've never read any of those, but I think they should do that with Jaws. Do you think Jaws Jr. maybe has like a little crab as a pet or something?
Probably.
He has to have some kind of a kooky sidekick.
Probably Wacky, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, I'm really, really fascinated
like
by
they
the
did,
Jaws family.
What, Scooby-Doo begat Speed Buggy, which begat Jabberjaws. They all had that. It was like an animal with a group of kid investigators around it and some sort of vehicle.
Who's your MVP this issue?
My MVP was Iron Man? Question mark? I don't know.
I picked the Vision. I like the fact that he talked Hyperion down. Rather than trying to fight him, he's just like, dude. And Hyperion was like, okay. Useless character?
Beast. Though Ms. Marvel does get punched through two walls. Two.
I picked Quicksilver, who doesn't get to do much before he's taken out. And I was disappointed because I thought the idea of fighting an evil Thor or a possessed Thor would have been kind of interesting. It would have been nice to see like Quicksilver involved in that. I would have involved more Avengers in that rather than basically making Iron Man versus Thor. But, you know, that's just me. Avengers level threat?
I guess so.
Like, yeah, I guess. What's the threat? Is it the Squadron Sinister?
Dr. Spectrum? Took out most of the team, right?
Yeah. What'd you grade it?
I just gave it a C. It was entertaining, but pointless. It really doesn't matter.
I gave it a C-.
Ooh!
Here's the thing. So, I watch a lot of bad movies for bad movie podcasts. And some bad movies are really bad. Like Highlander 2, where you watch them and you're like, this isn't a good movie. And it's because all of these things are so stupid and they don't make sense. And sometimes you watch a bad movie, and it's like Troll 2, and it's laughably bad, and you can enjoy it.
It's entertaining because it's so bad. Yeah.
But more often than not, a lot of bad movies that come out are just... There's not like something about them that you're like, well, that's why that movie's bad. They're just thunderingly mediocre, where you don't even... Like, I can't even give you an example, because they leave my mind the instant I finish watching them. And that's this annual. I couldn't point... Well, except for the stupid idea of bringing all the Squadron Sinister people, bringing all their memories back. There's not one thing in this issue that I would go, this is the problem with this issue. The art's fine. It moves along.
Right. Usually one of these issues will start with some sort of premise, and then at some point it'll be like, that's what went wrong there in the plot that made the whole rest of this stupid. But this one from the very beginning is like, whatever.
They're like, we're going to throw a bunch of our action figures against each other and see what happens. And that's fine, but it's just like, it fades out of your mind like that.
Yeah.
I would rather it be stupid bad.
I have another thing to add to the end with our MVP and useless character. This is my favorite line of dialogue taken out of context.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Oh my God, I'm the wizard.
Nice.
That's the worst. Can you imagine waking up from some nightmare that you thought was like your career and your life and you didn't realize you're the wizard?
Oh. That would be the worst.
All right. We have got one more issue to do and one more issue to finish out not just this episode, but this year. It is the Avengers number 178 from December of 1978. It is by Steve Gerber and Carmine Infantino, and it is called The Martyr Perplex. Would you like to talk about them now or when I get done with my summary?
Is that something?
I didn't even look it up because I hated this so much. Would you like me to?
The Martyr Complex?
No.
Or Steve Gerber?
The Martyr Perplex.
Oh, what does that even mean?
I don't know what it means.
I think Steve Gerber just pulled two words out of a hat. I'm going to call this one the...
Well, I'm assuming...
the Purple Rainbow. I don't know. What?
I'm assuming that he's it's a takeoff on the Martyr Complex, but it's perplex because it doesn't make any sense.
Because it's just a confusing issue?
I guess. Are we talking about him now or later?
We usually do this up front now. So.
All right, let's talk about Steve Gerber. Steve Gerber was born in 1947 and died, sadly, in 2008. He started out as an ad agency copywriter, but started freelancing short stories. He soon became an associate editor and writer at Marvel. And then also wrote for DC, and then wrote for, or then did a lot of television animation. His probably best known series, for DC, he created the series Hard Time. Maybe not his best known, but he did create it.
I've never heard of that in my life.
Really?
No.
Well, he also wrote Man-Thing, Daredevil, Defenders, Fool Killer, Guardians of the Galaxy, Son of Satan, Omega the Unknown, She-Hulk, The Submariner, and Tales of the Zombie. But probably is best known for being the creator of Howard the Duck. And that's part of the reason he didn't do a lot of comics, I believe, because he ended up getting into a huge legal battle with Marvel about who owned Howard the Duck. If you look at the list of titles I just gave you, should be one thing that jumps out at you, which is that he really didn't write a ton of mainstream stuff.
No.
He tended to write the things around the edges of mainstream stuff.
The Steve Gerber, titles.
He's known as being different.
Yes, he was an odd one.
Yeah, his sensibility was a little different than everybody else's. I will be honest and say I'm not as big a fan of a lot of people of Steve Gerber's work. His Defenders is fun.
Wait, did he do the Defenders stuff that had the elf with a gun?
Yep.
Yeah, he did all the weird things.
Yeah. And that was fun. It worked for the Defenders.
I guess.
But
probably my least favorite part of that run.
But I'm not really a huge Steve Gerber fan.
Mm, yeah.
I know a lot of people love him, but the Howard the Duck stuff of his I've read has not thrilled me.
It's very 1970s.
Yeah.
You can't read it now and get the same feel for it.
Carmine Infantino is a penciler, and it's funny because we talked about him a while ago. We didn't get in depth about him, but we mentioned him, I think because of a Bullpen Bulletins thing. And we said, well, he'll never draw the Avengers. Hey, look at this. He draws the Avengers, and he'll be back to draw them, I think, three more times. He was born in 1925 and died in 2013. He started inking. He started as an inker during the golden age of comics. We haven't gotten all the creators we've talked about for a long time have been the new people that came in the 70s.
Yeah.
But Carmine Infantino is one of the old guard. He started inking and penciling in the golden age. He worked for DC and for pretty much every publisher at the time, including Timely, which is what Marvel would eventually become. We discussed before in the Silver Age, he kind of helped launch the Silver Age as the penciler on The Flash and a lot of their other books. And he became important at DC. He eventually became their editorial director, and then he became their publisher. Unfortunately, he, by all accounts, was kind of a jerk.
Yeah.
And the publisher did not work out for him, and in 1976 he was relieved of those duties, so he went back to freelancing. Probably most of what he's known for is at... as at DC, but probably what he's known the best for are the series Spider-Woman, Star Wars, Detective Chimp, Batman, Adam Strange, Supergirl, and of course, The Flash. And honestly, I'm not a huge fan of his art. I never have been. Oh, I need to actually do this then, huh? All right, so here we go.
Oh, okay, thanks for listening.
I've been making jokes about the furries, which apparently abound in the Marvel Universe, and this issue is going to make me face that head on, it seems. Thanks a lot, Steve Gerber. The Beast is at a bar, trying to see how many women he can have sex with on this particular night. Some of the non-fur-covered men are angry the Beast is getting so much attention, and one of them picks a fight with our, hero, who promptly wipes the floor with him. Then, deciding that his night is ruined, the Beast leaves. Your night is ruined, Beast? I have to recap a Steve Gerber written fill-in. This will not be pretty, or likely comprehensible. The Beast goes out into the pouring rain, where he's accosted by some gaunt dude dressed in rags, who goes on about how he's a physical manifestation of the Beast's pain, and he's absorbed not his physical pain, but the mental anguish the Beast has felt, although it manifests on this man's body as physical damage. Then a bolt from the sky strikes him, and he's ash. Damn you, Gerber. Why couldn't they have hired Bill Mantlo for this? I'd love to see the Beast fight the Hypno Hustler. Oh, thank goodness. The Beast goes back to Avengers Mansion to hang out with the Wasp and Wonder Man. Something normal to grab onto. The Beast relates his story to his teammates, but they chalk it up to drinking too much, or crazy mutant senses, or a flair for the dramatic. Look, no one cares, Beast. Move on with your life. But he can't move on with his life. For some reason, this craziness continues to haunt him throughout his week, even distracting him during his date with furry number 432, Winnie. Still, Winnie automatically becomes my favorite character of the issue when, after the Beast tells her his story, she describes what the skinny man said as just babble. The Beast doesn't get the hint and continues to wax philosophical, ending by saying he wants to help just one person. Winnie says he can help her. Let's cut to a library, where a man with a face on both sides of his head is telling four other men how he's tricked the Beast into trying to steal something from the room they currently occupy because he knows psychology and blah blah blah. Two Faces calls himself the Manipulator, and is trying to convince this group of men that he could control all the Avengers the way he is controlling the Beast. All he needs is $10 million and... wait, here comes the Beast. They shall secretly observe him to prove that the Manipulator can deliver the goods. The Beast does sneak into the room and grabs a box, whereupon the Manipulator drops a cage over him, striding into his presence with the other four men. The Beast says the box he has was stolen by the Manipulator from a scientist, and the Beast is just getting it back. But the Manipulator explains that the Beast has been, well, manipulated, and it was all a lie. When the Beast goes to open the box, he's suddenly hit with sensations from his own life, which make him obedient to the Manipulator? Damn you, Gerber! The four crooks agree to fund the Manipulator's work, and after paying him, the Manipulator shoots beams from his eyes, which stun them? Then we find out that the Manipulator is working for the CIA, I think? He's helping them by mind-controlling these criminals for them? They pay him, he leaves, and the feds call the cops to arrest the paralyzed criminals. The feds also suggest that they wanted this device in case any superheroes ever went evil? Well, that makes a certain sense, and I'm sure we'll see the government using this technology in the future.
Oh yeah, probably.
Shortly after they leave, the Beast comes out of his trance, apparently remembering nothing and feeling much better, thank you. He skedaddles, bouncing over the heads of our feds, who continue on their way only to encounter some gaunt dude dressed in rags, who says he's the embodiment of their pain. Damn you, Gerber! The end.
I kept thinking that that guy was somebody.
The Manipulator?
I feel like, no, the dude in the rags. I kept thinking, I've seen that guy somewhere before.
A prototype of Tatterdemalion?
No, I think there's a member of the, what's that group that Makari and Icarus and them are?
The Eternals?
Yeah, isn't there a guy in the Eternals that's wearing, like, rags and he has a blindfold on and has, like, a stick?
No, that's the possessor of the Elders of the Universe.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's, when I first saw him, I was like, oh, it's that guy. No, it's not that guy.
Our roll call this issue is Beast, Wonder Man, Wasp, and Captain America, barely. We do see Jarvis, and our villain is, I guess, the Manipulator.
Mm-hmm. I took this as a natural, because the annuals don't usually fall in the timeline of, so I took this as a natural follow-up to the end of the Korvac saga. Because it's, well, it's the next issue.
Yeah.
The Korvac saga ended, and then this was the next actual issue. So whenever somebody showed up, my notes were like, wait, aren't Wonder Man and Wasp dead? And then, wait, isn't Captain America dead?
Beast is the only Avenger. It should have just been the Beast is the only Avenger. Right. And Jarvis kicking around the mansion by themselves.
Maybe this was, I was thinking maybe this was going on concurrently with the Korvac saga. This is what Beast was doing while he was away.
The dialogue in this issue, especially at the beginning, in the first page, makes me a little nauseous. Because these guys are talking about the women after the Beast, and he says, look at the hunger in their eyes. So I'm not sure if they want to eat the Beast, or if they want to have sex with the Beast, though sadly it seems to be the other way. Look at the way their lips moisten at the sight of him.
Yeah, I've never talked to anyone like that.
Look at the way their lips moisten?
I've never said that to anybody.
But does it happen?
I don't know.
Wouldn't
be anything I'd observe, that's for sure.
You know the fairer sex better than I do.
Okay.
Do your wife's lips moisten?
No, they're usually pretty dry.
But when she sees you and wants to eat you or have sex with you... Can you ask her and let us know next episode?
That's an in-depth question.
Mm. Also, where is the Beast supposed to be?
Right? Because the one dude at the bar is wearing a tuxedo?
It looks like he's at a wedding reception.
I don't know.
I think it's supposed to... They say it is...
it's just a bar, isn't it?
I mean, I realize by this point in time, Carmine Infantino is, what, almost 60?
Yeah.
So, probably doesn't get out to as many bars as he used to. But I believe they say that this is a trendy First Avenue laboratory of New York's single scene.
Yeah, I don't think that the single scene in New York in 1978 had a bunch of 50-odd-year-old dudes just hanging out in suits.
And when the Beast throws this guy, he apparently throws him into what looks like a buffet table, which you don't see at a lot of bars. Jason, you may go to bars more than I do.
My bars are fancier.
Do they have buffet tables in them?
Depends on what time of day you're there.
Maybe someone should have given Carmine Infantino some reference
I like the fact that this guy, whose name is Perry, is upset that he's not going to get laid tonight because the Beast is taking all the good women.
Right?
Yeah, Perry, that's why you're not scoring tonight, because of Beast. It has nothing to do with the fact that you look like a shaved Muppet version of Marlon Brando. And you're pretty much just an ass. Like,
yeah. Well, Carmine Infantino seems to have a little trouble keeping this guy looking the same from panel to panel, because that guy doesn't look like that guy.
Yeah, that guy looks more like a bloated Tom Selleck.
Yeah. I only have one more note for this issue.
Do you have anything?
Let's see if I can. I know when Beast leaves the bar, well, how hard is it raining?
I mean, it doesn't look like Beast is in the rain. It looks like someone has broken the dam and Beast is being washed away.
It looks like he's walking on the bottom of the ocean. It is raining so hard. And then he, after he has this encounter with this dude in rags, he hops back to the Avengers Mansion by bouncing off the roofs of cars. Thanks for jacking up our insurance premiums, Hank.
We often will make jokes about how, or not make jokes, but we'll mention how in the Marvel Universe, in the DC Universe, people seem to love the heroes. But in the Marvel Universe, the public and the heroes have a very precarious relationship. This is Exhibit A as to why.
Yeah.
There's no wonder people hate them.
You're already soaking wet. Were you afraid to walk through a puddle?
And look, when he gets to Avengers Mansion, literally it looks like a gallon of water is falling out of his coat on the floor.
He was keeping buckets in his pockets.
Look, he's still got it. He's now walked all the way into this room.
Yep.
And he's still making giant puddles.
Yep. And then he sits down on a chair and he's perfectly dry.
Yeah.
It was just his coat was wet, I guess. Yeah. All the water in his pockets. I love that montage on page 14. The 5th panel. When I first glanced at it, I thought he was sitting on the toilet.
And Captain America comes in. He's like, let's go, Beast. We got work to do.
He's in I guess he's in the gym lifting weights, but it looks like he's sitting on a toilet.
Well, and lifting weights or throwing weights?
Tossing weights around?
We can't see, but I'm guessing Quicksilver's over here, and he's like, hey, Quicksilver, catch.
Or somebody, maybe Wonder Man threw it to him? Yeah, my last note was, and what the hell was all that? I don't understand what the manipulator's doing. I guess these are heads of crime families that he's showing this thing to, and then why is he also working with the government? I didn't know if that was the CIA or SHIELD or who.
Well, the only reason I thought it was the CIA is because they call themselves the agency, which, if I know anything from TV,
I figured it was SHIELD, because that just seems like a Marvel thing. I'm guessing the fact that he has two faces is why he double crossed these guys.
But I don't understand how any of this works.
Or why I care.
Well, and also, he calls the Beast, the manipulator says to the Beast, he's like, his status as a new Avenger. A new Avenger? He's been a member, the Beast has been a member of this team now for 4 years.
Is he?
So, which makes me wonder, how long has this story been sitting in a drawer? Did they write this back in 1974?
Right after they had their encounter with the Stranger.
And it's just been hanging out all this time.
Or whatever that was.
Yeah, I don't understand when Beast opens up this. I mean, getting the Beast.
Well, we don't see what actually happens. I'm guessing it had something to do with that Winnie woman.
I don't really want to parse this story because it doesn't deserve this. But first of all, we don't know how the manipulator creates the effect of the gaunt dude.
That was too complicated for Gerber to explain. I think Gerber started to write this and was like, wait, I put way too many things in there. Let's just gloss over it and go to the end.
I mean, the gaunt dude himself would be easy enough, but then when he gets destroyed by the lightning, what is that? And is there something subliminal there? Because shouldn't someone as intelligent as the Beast listen to the ramblings of that madman and be like, well, this is... who cares?
Yeah,
he gets, go on with his life.
But he gets so upset about it that he's whining about it the whole rest of the issue.
Which made me think, is there something going on here? Is there a mental control of some kind? Getting the Beast to steal a box is easy, because at this point in time, the Beast is an idiot. And Winnie's all he has to do is send Winnie after him.
Yeah,
and have Winnie say, yeah, can you steal this box for me?
I'm guessing that's what Winnie did, because we don't see that.
No, we don't see it, but that seems to make sense. But then when he opens
the box zaps him in the face.
It zaps him in the face with memories of his life, and then for whatever reason, he'll do whatever the manipulator tells him to do, which makes no sense.
And then the manipulator wanted money from those guys, but then he zapped them and turned them. Why? Why did they throw that extra wrinkle in there? Was this supposed to come up later? The next time the manipulator shows up? Right. Which is never.
It's a fill-in. You would think when you're writing a fill-in, you know that nothing you write is ever going to be mentioned again. Right.
And you don't leave loose ends that could be to be continued. That's not a fill-in issue. Maybe these guys showed up in Howard the Duck later. When he was running for president, and they zapped him to make him not run for president then.
I'd like to talk more about this story, but which I mean, I really don't want to talk more about this story
because
it makes my head hurt.
Bullpen Bulletins. Stan Soapbox gives a little detail about that trip to Japan he mentioned last episode. They're doing their own live-action version of Spider-Man, which, if you haven't seen it, is awesome. Have you seen Japanese Spider-Man? It's so good. It's like a cross between Spider-Man that we know, like the cartoons kind of, and like a kung fu movie, and Power Rangers, because he fights these giant creatures.
Of course he does.
It's awesome. And then he gets his first reader-submitted question for the bullpen, or for the soapbox. Will comics get better and better or stagnate with the same recycled ideas? To which I answered, yes, both are correct.
That's what I answered as well, and that's basically what Stan Lee answers. Yeah. He gives the same page.
He gives some answer that's like, it's one big shill about all the products that they've put out over the years. I think he missed the quality versus quantity aspect of that debate. I'm not sure.
But that is what comics will do. They will get better, because obviously the comics we have today, much better than what we saw there. But they, at the same time, a lot of comics will still continue to recycle the same old ideas.
Yeah, I'm not sure what he was implying there by saying, oh, we printed this, and then this thing about the Beatles, and this stuff about the Wizard of Oz, and we like, what is that? That doesn't mean they're good. That just means you put out a bunch of different things.
Yeah, it's easy to print. It's easy to print new books. It's different to print books with new ideas.
I would say you've stagnated because all you're doing is putting out licensed comics for stuff that I've already seen.
Yeah.
I don't need a Wizard of Oz comic. I saw the movie. Do you have anything else?
Yeah, Marvel had their second annual writers meeting.
I wrote that down too, and I expected to write something else after that, and I didn't. They didn't give us any details of it.
No, they really don't. I would imagine they don't do that anymore. At this point in time, they have
retreats.
But do all the writers go, or do they go in families? The Avengers books and the X-Men books? And
it depends on what they're doing, I think. I think they have a retreat for overall, so they can plan like their whatever big crossover thing they're going to do. But then, yeah, the families. I don't think there aren't as many families as there used to be.
No, there's not. There's pretty much Avengers and X-Men.
I don't even know if they have that anymore, because they've split. I mean, there's Uncanny Avengers. They've crossed over so much stuff.
I don't think that book exists anymore.
Probably not. There's an Uncanny Inhumans, I know that. Oh, and there was also Marvel Comics had to point out that they're still only 35 cents. I guess at this point, DCs have gone up.
And they will be only 35 cents until the end of time.
Never, ever to go up in price.
Any letters?
Basically, everyone's happy that Hawkeye's back. That's what I gleaned from all the letters.
Well, and Rick Bedard of Windsor, Ontario, guesses that Kang is behind the disappearing Avengers.
I was going to write that down,
too. Which actually is a better guess than the Space Phantom.
That's Space Phantom. It was a collector.
Well, yeah, but that one guy thought it was a space. Like, this,
that
this
might have
space
been Rick Bedard. He actually shows up quite a few times.
He'd be like, no, wait, no, it's Ultron.
If it wasn't him, then it had to be this guy.
Wait, no, it was the Skrulls. No, wait, it was the Manipulator. MVP?
Beast. Let's go with Beast.
I picked Winnie. But then I found out she's working for the Manipulator, but I just love it when she's like, well, that guy said was just Babylon. I'm like, thank you. I picked Captain America for almost not being in the issue. So close to not being in it at all. Useless character?
Also Beast.
Yeah,
I picked Beast. Point was, how do you get trapped in a cage? How does that happen? He's the Beast. How did he get trapped in a cage? Did he see the cage hanging from the ceiling? It's not like it was a huge high-ceiling apartment that he walked into.
Well, and I picked him because
he probably bumped his head into the cage walking into the room.
Because he let something that was so stupid affect him so profoundly.
Yeah, yeah.
Avengers level threat.
Only
I'm sorry.
Only to himself.
Yeah. Final grade?
An F. That was a stupid plot, a stupid villain, just stupid. My favorite line of dialogue taken out of context? I'm not too darn smart, but I know when I've been shafted. Oh, the levels. On our next episode, get ready to be amazed by a trio of villains who quickly become the Avengers' top foes for decades to come, or are never seen again. It's a toss-up.
I'm really curious, because I don't know what next issue is.
Let's see, we've got the Monolith, and the Stinger, and Bloodhawk, I think, are the three characters.
So they become their main villains for
forever. Yeah.
All right. Well, that was a good time there. Good time was had by all.
Not really. I don't ever want to hear about those two issues again.
It's a shame because for so long we've been like, no, really, guys, the issues are getting better. And then the last two episodes we pretty much trashed the issues again. I swear, the issues are getting better.
Sooner or later, when we get to the 80s, they'll get better. The 70s introduce a lot of interesting characters, but not a lot of interesting stories. That's it, everybody. Thanks for listening. If you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on Instagram and Twitter at Avenging Hour. We have a Facebook page. We have a webpage, AvengingHour.com. And our email address is mail@AvengingHour.com. Send us all your well wishes and good words and parades and presents. See you next week.
Bye-bye.